Hello, everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and joining me for our first J2 season review pod is John Steele. Hi, John. How are you?
James, how's it going? Very well, thanks. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. It's nice. It's daytime for a change, which is a bit strange, but we'll get through it, I'm sure. And this pod, we're focusing on the top eight. And we've got a few, we've enlisted the help of a few people to help us with certain teams, which we'll come to in due course. But we're starting, of course, at the top with the champions, Albirex Niigata. They finished with 84 points, so they were 4 points clear. Record of 25 wins, 9 draws, 8 losses. They scored 73 goals and only conceded 35. John, what are your thoughts on Niigata's season?
Yeah, this is a first of all, this is kind of early hospital pass in some ways, James, because they were so good and such worthy champions that we I think it's quite difficult to balance sort of how to talk about them, because it's all very positive, isn't it? We just end up reading out stats like you did. I think you mentioned they finished 4 points clear of the second place team, which makes them worthy champions. I think even more importantly, they were 12 points clear of third. So no arguments that they are deserving of automatic promotion. And I think we need to give a lot of credit to the manager, Rikizo Matahashi. I think he would have been the manager of the season if it wasn't for one of the teams we're going to talk about in a few minutes, Kumamoto. I think he did a brilliant job kind of getting the team organised and into that top two. Obviously, they finished sixth under the Spanish manager, Albert, last season. So to go from sixth to first is pretty good going. As you mentioned, I can only really echo, they had the joint best defence in the league with Tokushima and the best attack. That is the kind of combination that's going to get you in the top two, isn't it, in J2. And just one other thing I wanted to mention is, we talked a lot about Shion Honma in the first half of the season up until the summer and how he was the key man in attack. Obviously, they lost him during the kind of European summer transfer window. We talked a little bit about what kind of effect that would have on Niigata. And the answer was, because of how kind of well-balanced and well-organized their squad was, losing Shion Honma had like no impact at all. And they were able to kind of... I don't think we can say they cruised to promotion. That's doing them a disservice for how much hard work they put in. But losing, I mean, if you just flip it for a second and imagine that Yokohama FC had sold Koki Ogawa in the summer transfer window, that would have clearly had a huge impact on where their season was headed. So for them to lose Shion Honma but have other players step up and fill that void with kind of no issues, I think that is something that Rikizo Takahashi deserves a lot of credit for as manager this season. So yeah, well done to Niigata. They are champions, and I'm struggling. I'm running out of steam here. So how about you? What do you think about them?
Yeah, I completely agree. They deserved to go up automatically. I think deserved to win the league. They were in the top six from match day 8, and in the top three from match day 17, which was a 3-0 win over Yokohama FC, who were their nearest challengers. So I think that's pretty conclusive evidence for them as worthy champions. And we have talked a lot this year about their vast array of attacking talent, but I think what perhaps we haven't mentioned so much is that they were able to cover for when people were missing. So if Kaito Taniguchi was injured, Koji Suzuki produced a lot offensively, or if Suzuki was injured, Taniguchi came back and he produced offensively. When Honma left and Shunsuke Mito was injured or unavailable, Ryotaro Ito and Yota Komi stepped up. And I guess you could say perhaps they got lucky in the timings of those injuries, in that, if someone else was available to cover. But I think also it shows just how great that attack was. And I think also, because they had such an excellent attack, it meant that their defence was kind of overshadowed or unheralded. But like you said, they got equal best defence with Tokushima. And I did find like they were pretty good at closing out games. They conceded the fewest amount of goals in the last 15 minutes of games. And they were also quite good at coming from behind or salvaging something. If the conceding... first, they still managed to win a couple and draw 7. So that's a sign of a good team. And also, they had massive crowds, didn't they? The crowds really, as I think as the season progressed, they got bigger, and they were quite big to start with, and they were getting huge crowds towards the end of the year as people wanted to see the, you know, promotion being clinched and stuff. So I think now all bodes well for them at least having decent support when they go up to J1, and I hope that they'll be able to give a good account of themselves on the pitch as well. Mm. But it was really fun watching them this year. They were really great to watch. So that's Niigata done. And to talk about second place Yokohama FC, we're very happy to welcome at Yokohama FSG from Twitter to talk us through their season.
Hi there. I think in terms of our season, it's hard not to be happy with being promoted. Overall, I think we did pretty well considering we don't have a really deep squad, and we probably have an over-reliance on a few key players. But it's hard not to be happy to be promoted. Although towards the end of the season, we didn't really play all that well, and I'm not sure how we'll fare in J1 next season. It's difficult to say who was our key player, but for me, definitely was Ogawa. Just his goal threat, the amount of goals he scores was just amazing, and we definitely relied on him. Without him, I don't think we would even be in a position, you know, in the position we are now, being promoted automatically. So I think he was really vital, as was Brodison. When he's not playing, the other keepers aren't, well, they're good, but they don't instill confidence in the fans. I think for me personally, the biggest disappointment was we didn't really have a decent cup run. I would have expected to have gone further, but we did get, you know, defeated by one of the finalists, but it was a big score, and I think we could have done better, to be honest. I think the personal highlight for me was probably the last home game of the season. Seeing Nakamura's last home game was something really lovely to see. Even though we lost, it was an entertaining spectacle to watch. I thought the manager did okay. You know, he's got us automatic promotion, which is amazing. He tends to set the team up in a rather defensive way, and sometimes I wish the team could be a bit more adventurous. But I'm quite happy with him, and hopefully, you know, he can develop the squad further for next season. But I do think we're a good squad, very tight, but we don't have a deep sort of a depth in our squad, and we struggle if key players are missing. You know, if Ogawa, you know, is injured, I can't see who's going to replace him in terms of goals. And the same with Brodison, when he was injured, we just don't have the same quality of replacements. I think next year will be tough. Obviously, I'd like us to avoid the bottom three, but realistically, I think, you know, I think we're going to go straight back down. Unfortunately, we just don't have the finances to compete with, you know, the bigger teams in that league, and it's really, really difficult to compete on the same level. You know, you never know. I mean, we could surprise. I think we might surprise it on a few games, but I don't think we'll have enough in us to, you know, to avoid the bottom three. Because really, if we, you know, even if we get into the bottom three, you know, we have the playoffs, that could be a really difficult game for us. So it's difficult. Part of me, you know, thinks, oh yes, we can totally do it, but then the other part, it's probably the more realistic part, which thinks it's going to be a difficult task for us to get out of that bottom three position.
So that was at Yokohama FSG from Twitter to talk about Yokohama FC's season. Thank you very much. And now John and I are going to talk about third place, Fagiano Okayama. They were 8 points back from Yokohama, but this, I think, could probably class as their best ever season, couldn't you, John?
I think the statistics bear that out. I believe they got the most points they've ever had in a J2 season. So a record points haul for the club. And going from 11th last season, 11th in 2021, to third, I mean, however way you, whichever way you slice that, that's an improvement and a fantastic season. So I think there's possibly a kind of glass half empty aspect of that, because I think having finished third, you know, they were obviously hoping to go up through the playoffs, and that didn't happen. But I think now, you know, a few weeks after the season's finished, if you look at things in the round, it was a brilliant campaign for them. And Takashi Kiyama, the coach, I believe he's already renewed his contract. He'll be back next season for another go. And they were really good. They just ran out of steam, I think, at the critical time. I think in the league they lost three of the last four games, didn't they? And then they lost the first round of the playoffs against Yamagata. So it was just kind of a disappointing and a kind of pretty underwhelming end to what had been a fantastic season. I think in terms of personnel, you know, James, one of the things that Mitch Duke said when he signed for Okayama, and that was a slightly eyebrow-raising move, wasn't it? Because he's obviously, you know, I think a lot of people see him as like a J1 standard player. He's had time in J1 at Shimizu, I think. And he's, we were talking about this on Twitter, this on sort of Messenger there. I think he's the only J2 player at the World Cup, isn't he? I mean, he started against France for Australia earlier this week. So clearly not a bad player. When he was asked about that, when he joined Okayama, he said, well, the club have told me they're going for promotion and they're going to be signing, you know, big players to help them to do that. And at that point, at that time, that seemed like a bit of a, not a wild assertion, but I kind of, you and I exchanged glances like, we'll see how that goes. But then they talked the talk and they got Jordi Bice, they got Stefan Mork, they got Thiago Alves. They signed players that would get them up to that next level. So I think we have to give them a lot of credit for kind of talking the talk, but also walking the walk on that. As well. And our dad, you know, I was really looking forward to seeing Togo Umeda in goal for them this season, but he had that really bad knee injury early on that they had to kind of shuffle the pack in the goalkeeper position. But again, like with Niigata losing Shion Honma, it didn't really derail them as I thought it might. So they didn't get promoted, that's true, but they finished third. They had a fantastic season. So I think mostly it was a positive year for Okayama. Anything to add, James? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think for a lot of people, you know, recency bias, we look at the last four games and they lost three and then they flopped in the first round of the playoffs. I think people will remember it as a disappointment, but they finished in their highest ever position. Like you said, the most points ever. They were in the top six for all but four match days. And mostly they were in fourth, and then they moved up to third when Sendai imploded, which we'll hear a bit more about later. They got that really good centre-back pairing of Bice and Yanagi that we talked about a lot during the year. And they had some really eye-catching results as well. They beat Niigata 3-2. They beat Yamagata 2-1. They beat Sendai and Nagasaki 3-0 in consecutive games. They were 5-1 up at half-time against Kanazawa at home. It's not the first Kanazawa thrashing we're going to talk about today either. So they did play some really, really good stuff. And then like Thiago Alves, 16 goals. He was second in J2. Mitch Duke, 8 goals. Bice, 7. And then loads of assists and great play from Yosuke Kawano at right back. So they had really impressive performers across the pitch. And I remember, last year when that interview with Duke was published and everyone kind of heard, Okayama have said they're going to sign players so that we can push for promotion, and the rest of us went, yeah, right, of course they said that, but they actually did. So credit to them. It's a shame that it fell away right at the end, but I think perhaps with a little bit more distance they'll be able to look back on this season with fond memories despite missing out at the end. And they were good to watch, I think. I hope that they can take the next step. It will be interesting to see if they can next year. Okay. So that's Okayama done. Up next, fourth place, Raso Kumamoto. We've talked a lot about them over the last few weeks. And the man who joined us quite regularly to talk about them is going to talk us through their season. It's Gary Irwin.
So my name is Gary Irwin. And on Twitter, you can find me at GARRYIRWIN. And I go to all the Roasso Kumoto home games for my sins. Feelings on the season. Well, what can I say that hasn't already been said on previous podcasts about the season? It was Kumoto's best season ever. So we finished our highest league position, our highest points total, and we got so close to getting to J1. The season, we're still on a high. The fans are still, you can still see jerseys going around the city. People still talk about Roasso. So feelings on the season, we've never had a better season. So it was brilliant. It was just brilliant. Fantastic. The most important player, I would have to go with So Kawahara, who's anchoring the midfield. He's a young player. He came in, he's captained the side, and he was there every game. He takes the ball from the defence and switches it out to the midfield or to the forwards. He has a great pass. He's kind of one of those players, even though he's a defensive midfielder, he gave lots of assists this season. I think it was 10 or 12. But he also gives lots of assist to the assist, if you know what I mean. He's probably, yeah, the best midfielder we've had in a long time. Definitely the one who stamps his authority on a game. He likes to get the game to play at his pace, and he's very good at that. Now, I know he's been wooed by a lot of J1 clubs, so I don't expect to hold on to him for next season, but I'd be delighted if we did. But if he moved on, we'd be happy to see him go and play at a higher level. He's a local boy here to Kumamoto too, so we'd be happy to see him do well wherever it is. I would have to say my biggest surprise is probably Osamu Henry Ioha in defence. He came in on loan from, Sanfrecce Hiroshima. And he was previously at, was it Kagoshima in J3 or was it Gifu? And he never really played consistently there. So when he came in, I thought, oh, maybe he's just a bench player. But he ended up playing 30-odd games this season. Yeah, and he was really good on the ball and really good going forward. And in the playoffs, he scored 2 goals. So he was really one of our biggest players, and he stepped up when we needed him. So probably a big surprise for me when he came in. I didn't expect him to play that much, but he became a mainstay of that defence. Yeah, he's probably my biggest surprise of the season. My biggest disappointment, I think, would have to be Thales. He had a good season previously in J3. He played 20 games, scored 4 goals, and I thought he would get better this season, but he only played 12 games, and I would say half of them were probably just substitute appearances. He didn't get any goals. He didn't contribute much, mainly, so I was really disappointed. And as the season dragged on, I thought there must be a reason that the manager isn't picking him. And when he did get his few appearances, he kind of rushed things, and he would lose the ball or attacks would break down with him. Yeah, he was very disappointing this season. But he goes back. We sold him to... he's playing with Nagoya. So he was on loan to us, back to us this season. So I did expect him to step up and play more minutes, maybe get more goal involvements, but it didn't happen for whatever reason. I'd like to know why. So maybe he'll have better luck next year. The best result of the season, I think, let me take you back to May the 4th, Star Wars Day. And we were playing away to Yokohama FC. Now they're going strong in the league. They went up eventually, as you know. And we had a good away record previously, but we'd only beaten maybe Omiya or Morioka or even Verdi when they were poor. So, but this game, we were actually playing a good side away from home, and we managed to beat them with a 94th minute winner from Ito Shun. And I even think Kawahara, did he assist to the assist in that one? Yeah, he was involved in that goal too. So we scored with seconds left on the clock, and we came away with 3 points. And it was at that stage of the season, I thought, oh, hold on here. we actually, maybe we have a chance in J2 to finish pretty well. And, you know, we were right. We finished fourth and Yokohama finished second. So getting that 3 points back then, I think was very important for the team. It signaled that they were meant business this season. Yeah, our manager is probably, I think he's probably going to his longest stint. If he finishes next season, this club will be his longest stint at any club. Beating, he was at Sanga and he was at Kofu previously for maybe 3 years. And he's been doing a great job since the start. Getting us up from J3, getting us into the J2 playoffs. As I mentioned previously, it was our best season ever. So I can't have any complaints with the manager. Whatever he wants to do, his word is gospel now. I think give him that blank check. next season, I don't see how we can top this season, apart from just going up automatically, which would be a big ask, because we basically, Oki ran every last ounce of strength out of that squad. Every bit of power they had, every game, they went till the 95th, 6th minute, and they always tried. So next season, if we can keep the squad together, which would be a tall ask in itself, then I would hope to at least challenge for the playoffs again. And hopefully come the second half of the season, be in a position to be looking at the top two and wondering, could we get there and get the automatic promotion spot? We'll have to do something in the transfer market, maybe bring in some players. But Oki, he's had an eye for players for the last two or three seasons, and he's brought in some real gems. So maybe he can bring in one or two more. Maybe another centre-back, maybe. Ioha is, I would guess, going back to his parent club at the end of this season. And maybe someone to get the goals. We did score a lot of goals and we spread them around. But Takahashi and Sugiyama, they got most of the goals and they're good players. We just get maybe one more player to complement them. That's, of course, if we can hold on to both of them. I'm presuming, again, we're going to hold on to most of our players, which would be tough. So next season, if we can keep the squad together, I would hope to challenge again. We have probably one of the youngest squads. I think I checked the average age. It was like 24 for the whole squad. And considering, like, we have Kuroki at the back, he's 33, and Sato in goals is 36. So our very young squad outside of those two. Very young squad. So I hope they can just give a good account of themselves next season and we don't just fall back and become like mid-table fodder, but we actually take a step up, and some players take a step up too.
Well, that was Gary Irwin talking about Russell Kumamoto, the fourth place finishers. Thanks, Gary. And now John and I are going to take a look at fifth place Oita Trinita, who were just 1 point back of Kumamoto, 66 points. They had a very, I thought, a bit of a strange season, John. What did you make of them this year?
Oh, yeah, you've gone for strange. My notes contain the word weird, which I guess is enough. So we think we're in agreement on that, James. Yeah, I don't really know how to characterise Oita's season in total. It kind of felt a bit like a season of two halves. So obviously they you know, they finished bottom of J1 in 2021 and came down to J2, and then in that first half of the season they seemed to struggle to balance the kind of J2 commitments with the Levan Cup group stage that they had to go through. And we'll perhaps mention that when we talk about Tokushima as well in a few minutes. But yeah, I mean, I know these teams have a big squad, so I don't think it's necessarily putting out enough of a squad to play these games. In the Levan Cup, there was a problem with just the kind of having the kind of, you know, sort of, you know, midweek weekend kind of pattern that teams found difficult. And I think the fact that, you know, they're around teams that didn't have that problem, you know, most J2 teams weren't in that situation this year, made it difficult for them. However, yeah, they ended up finishing fifth and their run-in was very strong. I got to see them very close up away at Yokohama FC during the run-in. That was a fine kind of 3-2 win that kind of showed all of their good points and some of their weaknesses. But yeah, I remember going back talking to Sean Carroll in the kind of season previews about Oita, and when I looked at their squad, I didn't really fancy them to finish in the top six. I thought it might be a kind of transitional season for them. Sean taught me around, though. He was a lot more confident that they would be in the playoffs, and he turned out to be right. But I don't think they never really convinced me that they were going to go all the way in the playoffs, especially defensively, where I think I'm right in saying they had the worst kind of defensive record for goals conceded in the eventual top six. And they did have this tendency to overplay or get things wrong when they were kind of building up from the back. They gave possession away quite often. I think we can be kind and say that. It didn't seem to matter whether it was Shun Takagi or the other goalkeeper, Shun, I forget his name, Shun. Both goalkeepers are named Shun. It didn't matter who got the nod. It was a bit worrying when they were in possession. And I think you can kind of see, perhaps boiling the season down to one or two moments is unfair, but it was the defensive errors that cost them in the playoffs, wasn't it? I think if we remember Yuta Koide with his kind of, I don't really know how he did it still, but that lunge where he slide tackled the ball and it went underneath him, which let him come. And he's now signed for Sendai, so I'm not really sure how their defending is going to go next season, but we're perhaps off topic. But Oita, weird, strange season, like you said. Not very convincing at all in the first half, a bit more convincing in the second with a good run in, but I never really felt they were likely to go all the way in. They never threatened automatic promotion at all, and they didn't really look like they were going to go all the way in the playoffs either. So I think, whereas Okayama finished third and can be kind of had a inverted commas good season, I think for Oita, it has to go down as a bit of a disappointment. I don't know if that's a bit harsh, but what do you think?
Yeah, it's. I think you could look at it either way, because based on the first half of the season, the first game of the season was postponed due to COVID, wasn't it? And then they had all of those Levain Cup matches to play in, which meant that they were, particularly in March, were really, really busy. And I remember it affected their league form, because they were only 15th after match day 18, so they really struggled early on. I remember we were worried about, well, is Shimotaira managing the squad well enough? And it turns out he was, I think, because they did come good in the second half of the season, and it was a 12 game unbeaten run, which unfortunately they ended the season with two losses, which meant they couldn't leapfrog Kumamoto and get home advantage in the playoffs, which in the end turned out to be quite a big factor. And they only moved into the top six in match day 34, but they timed it pretty well. They timed their run quite well and took advantage of teams like Tokushima not winning enough or Sendai just going off a cliff. I saw them towards the end of the year as well. They against Kanazawa when they were 3-1 down, and they came back to draw 3-3 and probably should have won 4-3. So that was around the same time as they won away to Yokohama FC. So they were playing pretty well in the second half of the year. And they didn't really have any kind of standout players for me. And I'm not sure if that means that they were a good team or if they were a bit underwhelming. I don't really know. I mean, you talk about Koki Ogawa standing out at Yokohama FC, but that was quite an extreme case, I think. Oita, the good attacking record. They were only shut out 7 times, which is the joint second best in the league. But defensively, a bit iffy. They conceded a lot of goals from crosses, so it seems they've got issues there that need to be dealt with. And their top scorer was Shin Nagasawa with 8, but he only actually played 23 games, and I think 14 of those were, or only 14 of those were starts, or 14 off the bat, I can't remember. But he didn't start many games, but he was their top scorer, which, again, I mean, they scored a reasonable amount of goals, and I guess they were spread out, but perhaps a bit concerning that he was their top scorer, having played so few.
I expected a bit more from Hiroto Goya, to be honest. I don't think he was that impressive, but
again, I'm not. I think you can look at Oita either way, and I'm still not sure what to make of them, having had a whole season. So perhaps next year, without the extra cup competition at the start of the year, we'll see kind of a bit more from them. Okay, let's move on to sixth place, Montedio Yamagata. They were 2 points back from Oita. They had 64 points. A very up and down season, very inconsistent, but they managed to sneak into sixth on the final day thanks to that convincing win over their direct rivals Tokushima. We talked a bit about them, or you and Gary and Johnny talked a bit about them in the playoff pods, but what did you think of Yamagata's season overall?
Yeah, I think this is another one that's quite difficult to quantify, because I think when you make it into the playoffs, that's a success of sorts. But when you know, as we've outlined in previous pods, it's incredibly difficult for a J2 side to be, you know, to win the playoffs because of the way the odds are stacked against them. So, yeah, I think my notes, I've put this was a bit of a roller coaster of a season for Yamagata. And they ultimately, as you said, it ended in disappointment. Just looking at it from the Yamagata kind of front office's point of view, though, I think Peter Klimovsky's already signed a new contract to be the manager for 2023. So they must be fairly happy with the direction that the club is going in. What I tried to look for, I actually looked at how Yamagata had done last year to see if there was anything, you know, what kind of progress, in inverted commas, they've made from last season. So they've moved up one place from seventh to sixth based on what they did in 2021. That's good, right? That's better. They scored one more goal than they had in 2021 and conceded nine fewer. So they improved defensively a lot. I think that has to go down to your friend Masaki Goto to some extent in goal, who's really good. However, they ended with four fewer points than the previous season and three fewer wins. So I think, again, it's one you could balance it as a progress because they finished one place higher than the season before. But it's very, very slim progress in if you look at the actual number of points won and games that they've won. So I think, yeah, it's difficult to quantify. I think they'll obviously be disappointed that they've not. I think the top two was the target, probably. Automatic promotion would have been the target. So to have only finished sixth and then, you know, not gone, you know, all the way in the playoffs will be disappointing. However, they were extraordinarily entertaining to watch. So if you're one of these kind of people like me, radical sort of, you know, left-wing ideologues that think it should be fun to watch for, then they were a good team to watch. But that's not quite the same as being successful, is it, as Yokohama FC demonstrated. So I think it will be, you know, Yamagata are one of my favourite teams to watch, but they would perhaps feel that they should have done a bit better given the resources that they had available. We should note as well, Kota Yamada, probably the sort of standout attacker, he's already left, hasn't he? He's gone to Kashiwa Reysol in J1 for next year, and I think others from that squad are going to follow. I think Riku Handa, the defender, is probably going to be on the move to J1 as well. So it'll be interesting to see. I think there's going to be a mild, you know, perhaps a kind of light rebuilding job needed at Yamagata by Peter Klimovsky for next year. And they will go again, perhaps even with Akira Disaro. I mean, his kind of sort of mid-season loan spell from Shimizu was absolutely critical to them getting into the playoffs, I think. So that I'm sure they'll be trying to make that permanent if they can. But yeah, I don't know, a roller coaster of a season and yeah, very entertaining, but ultimately not the desired results. I think that's probably fair. What do you think, James?
Yeah, I mean, they had a really poor start and then they had a good run and then they had another poor run. And then, like I said, they only snuck into the playoffs on the final day. They scored 62 goals, which is the same as Oita. And again, they had them from coming from all over. I mean, Disaro and Fujimoto, Taiki Kato, plus De La Torre and Thiago Alves, who ranked first and second in the league for goals scored in the last 15 minutes of games, plus additional time. Something that they added to in the playoffs, didn't they? Yeah, plus, like you mentioned, Riku Handa, Kota Yamada, both very impressive. But Yamagata had some very ordinary results. I mean, they drew 3-3 with Iwate. And I remember, I think at least two of Iwate's goals were from Yamagata giving the ball away in midfield. They also lost 1-0 to Gunma twice, which, I mean, Gunma survived relegation on the... Was it on the final day or the penultimate day? So a team chasing promotion like Yamagata shouldn't be losing twice to Gunma, really. So, yes, very, I guess, but the playoffs coming back means that I think, although perhaps teams like Yamagata, their record might not have been as good as last year, the fact that they were able to make the playoffs this year because the playoffs were happening, you could see it as progress. And I think also, you know, Klimovsky's had a bit more time at the club and is being able to kind of build a squad that he wants, or a squad of players that can do what he wants on the pitch. So, yeah, and yeah, he's staying for next year. So, if they do lose a lot of players, I think he'll be able to deal with that. I think he's. That's one of the things about J2 is generally teams lose a lot of players, and I think they lost a fair few at the end of last year, but he found good replacements, and I think he'll probably be able to do it again. But we'll come back to that in late January and see what's happened with their squad. So that's the top six. We've got two more teams to talk about. Coming up next, we've got the thoughts of at Vigalta Blog on Vigalta Sendai. Vigalta Sendai finished 7th with 18 wins, 9 draws, 15 losses for 63 points, 67 goals scored but 59 goals against. And we asked at Vigalta _ blog for some thoughts on their season. What are your feelings on the season overall? Last season was super disappointing given how strong we looked mid-season. Everyone felt that we'd secured a playoff spot at least, but the team fucked it up after the Nagasaki game. The most important player, Nakajima's rental from Osaka, was pivotal to our season. He established himself as one of the best in the team, and everyone is craving for him to stay. The biggest surprise of the season, Nakajima Motohiko was arguably a panic signing after Akasaki Shuhei left to follow his dream of playing football abroad, despite ending up at amateur side Nankatsu SC instead. We thought he was going to be a striker to fill our depth, but he did really well as a midfielder. He surprisingly filled the void left by the inconsistency of our midfield instead. We do expect that the board will tie him down permanently. The biggest disappointment last season is how we managed to not reach the playoffs, but veteran players like Endo Yasushi should take the blame as well. He started really well, orchestrating our attack in the first half of the season before fading off in the latter. The unnecessary red card he got in the Tokushima game summed it all for me. It was such a childish mistake by a veteran that was supposed to lead us back to J1. The best game was the 16th match day, Sendai 4, Kanazawa 1. 2 goals from Foginho, we became the leader after that game. It all went downhill from there. Thoughts on the managers? Harasaki exceeded my expectation before fucking it all up in the second part of the season, but injuries also played its part. Supposed key players like Nagura, Kida, Endo were only occasionally fit. Even when fit, they're not consistent enough. Vigalta Sendai relies heavily on their wing play. The aftershock of 1-2 loss to Nagasaki with the handball decider was probably felt by the squad, and Harasaki did not have the winning mentality or experience to overturn it. For Ito, I do not believe he's good enough. He barely improved the team. I do not see any game plan or his intention during the game. He has not yet found his best 11 somehow. Most supporters are willing to give him time with the squad, which is normal for Vigalta Sendai fans. He would be welcome to prove me wrong. Of course, the goal for next season is to get back to J1. This winter will be the first time in 2 to 3 years that we've resolved our financial problem. I expect that the club will bring in players that suit Ito's play style, which I've no clue about how he wanted to play. We've signed a lot of exciting prospects. Hiromu Kamada, Daichi Kamada's younger brother, George Onaiwu, Ado Onaiwu's brother. Thus, the future is comparatively bright for Vigalta Sendai fans, if Ito is the right man. Right, those were the thoughts of Jay at Vigalta _ blog on Twitter about Sendai. Thank you very much for sharing those. We've got one more team to talk about, John. It's the 8th place Tokushima Vortis. They had the frankly mind-boggling record, 13 wins, 23 draws, 6 losses. Only scored 48 goals, but only conceded 35. But they finished 2 points behind Yamagata. They had 62 points. What the hell happened at Tokushima?
It's a great question. We'll probably never know. J2 clubs don't offer us a kind of, you know, black box recorder to work out what's gone wrong at the end of seasons, sadly. But I think, you know, from finishing 17th in J1 and being relegated, obviously the goal, the target in the following season is to return, right, to be promoted straight back into J1. They failed to do that. They finished eighth, and you've already kind of hit upon the sort of gigantic elephant in the room that can't be ignored, James. 23 draws from 42 matches. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to work out that drawing that many games means it's going to be difficult for you to get promoted, right? You've drawn more than half of the matches. That's points that have been dropped in a lot of cases. And I think that's borne out by the fact that if they could have just got a couple of wins, you know, they would have been in the top six. You know, they only finished 2 points off the top six, didn't they? So just one, you know, turning one or two of those draws into a victory would have been crucial for them finishing in the top six. However, you know, what they've done on the pitch has pleased a lot of people, I think, or impressed a lot of people, because Daniel Poyatos, the manager, he's already moved on and he's stepped up to J1. He's going to be Gamba Osaka's manager, right, in 2023. So we're Johnny Nickel, get ready for some draws, mate, is the only thing I can offer on that. But I think they did impress people with the way that they played, even if they didn't make it into the playoffs. They obviously had, even though the DAZN award ceremony didn't agree, they had, I think, the division's outstanding goalkeeper in Jose Aurelio Suarez, just absolutely fantastic performances week in, week out from him. I think, you know, we mentioned the number of draws, and I think where they had problems was at the other end, where they kind of struggled to really really hit the goal trail, didn't they? I think the top scorer was Shota Fujio, who had 10, and after him, Kazunari Ichimi had 7, and after that, Koki Sugimori with 5. But I think they really didn't quite sort of hit their straps in terms of goal scoring. I was a bit disappointed with their favourite player, Masaki Watai. I don't think he really... I thought this might be a breakout season for him. It didn't really happen. I think we mentioned him at all, really, in the kind of 9 months of the season, other than to say, you know, where is he kind of thing. So, I think defensively they were very strong. Their number of draws suggests that, but they just never really... I know they were in sixth place going into the kind of last round of games, but a bit like Oita, I never really felt this is a serious promotion contender. So I think it has to go down as an overall disappointment, but not without positives. And I think that's borne out by the fact that Gamba Osaka have picked Poyatos to be there, the new man in the hot seat at Panasonic Stadium. But James, what do you think?
Yeah, well, Gamba have obviously seen something in Poyatos over the last 2 years, and I think he's shown that he's a reasonable manager. This was a really strange season. I mean, I went on Football Lab to look at statistics to prepare for this, and the stats for Tokushima are really interesting, right? There's 23 draws, 8 of them were nil-nils, and they had the second most clean sheets in the league, and the joint best defence, the fewest losses in the whole league. They started the season 8 games unbeaten, 1 win and 7 draws, but then they went 8 games winless. And then after that, from match day 23, the only loss was on the final day, like when it mattered most. So they had quite incredible runs there, but they only scored 48 goals. Even though they were ranked third in the league for average possession, they had loads of ball, but they didn't do anything with it. And they didn't create enough. I know you can't read everything from the XG ratings, but they only had like a mid-table ranking of XG, which, you know, expected goals. So it's clear that they've got the ball, but they're not doing enough with it. And they also were not able to, when they did score first, they weren't able to hang on. They only won 80% of games in which they scored first, 12 out of 24, which was second worst in the league. So, and then they only got into the top six on match day 40. They were in top six for 2 match days, and they dropped out on the last day when they lost to Yamagata. They did put 5 goals past Iwate, but that was obviously an anomaly, because they were a very low scoring team. And it's okay to be a low scoring team if your defence is not conceding much, but I think they were too low scoring because they weren't able to turn draws into wins, or they weren't able to hold on to winning positions. And So I think we should give a lot of credit for their defence. Suarez in goal, as you mentioned, we both picked him in our team of the season, which is, as we know, carried more weight than the official team of the season. But the whole team defensively was excellent, and that goes for the attackers as well, because you defend as a team. But unfortunately, they didn't do enough going forward, and now it will be very intriguing to see if Poyatos was setting a platform with this season, because like you said, teams want to come straight back up, but it's not always not every team can come straight back up. It's when four come down, they can't all go back up. And for Tokushima, this was maybe disappointing, but I think where the club goes from here, how they build on this, will be quite instructive. Who they get in to replace Poyatos, and whether they can then turn those draws into wins next year.
Sorry, James. I was just going to mention something that just occurred to me. Is in the same way that I think Kumamoto might find that they are to some extent asset stripped by bigger clubs this winter, because Kumamoto have done so well that there are two or three, maybe four, five players in that team that will, you know, be fielding phone calls from J1 or, but you know, bigger teams, if you like. I wonder if the fact that Tokushima have finished eighth and had so many draws. I mean, there are a lot of good players in the squad, as we've mentioned just now. And if they've lost the manager, perhaps they might have, a lot of the players there might go under the radar a little bit this winter. They might be able to keep most of that squad together. For example, I mean, obviously we all know, and the listeners know, that our J2 team this season is the definitive one. But, you know, if the fact that Jose Aurelio Suarez, he didn't get mentioned really in the kind of DAZN awards, I think there are a lot of people that will, you know, he might stay on for another year. You know, if they can keep the nucleus of that team together, I mean, it does bear repeating, if they could have squeezed another 3 points out of their games last year, they would have been in the playoffs. So there is something for a manager to build on, I think, when they come in.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's the fact that they played so well as a team in terms of defence means that no one's going to be like cherry picked by J1 clubs or by teams coming down or anything like that. So yeah, it would be interesting to see what happens there. All right, so that's the top eight taken care of. And before we finish, we got there was a question from Mike. This actually was from quite a while ago. This was a couple of months ago. He said maybe a question to consider at some point. There was one particular episode. During this episode, you've said Yokohama FC and Oita aren't much good, but they're both top six teams. Pretty sure you've said similar about Sendai too. Apart from a simple J2 isn't very good, what does this say about the division? And I would add, perhaps, what does it say about us? But he was kind enough not to say that. So, John, what do you think? Do we need to recalibrate our expectations of what good is, or what?
Yeah, I think this is a great question, and I should preface my answer by saying I don't know really. So I'm about to sort of freestyle with the handbrake off a little bit. I do think the standard of J2 was not that high this year compared to previous years. I think the points tallies of each team kind of will bear that out. And I think at the bottom, you know, the teams that got relegated were very poor this year. So I think maybe on a wider point, I think there is some kind of retrenchment in terms of finances, you know, in the J League. I think the pandemic has hit teams very, very hard. That's not just in J2, but across the J League, you know, probably. So I think there's less money available for new players, and I think teams are having to sort of tighten their belts, you know, in every sense. And I think that does sometimes translate into tactics on the pitch as well. You know, psychologically, when teams feel like they you know, they have to keep things tight money wise, it can lead to the kind of pervading atmosphere of keeping things tight on the pitch as well. In matches. So I think Niigata, we said it at the top of the show and it bears repeating, this isn't kind of trying to denigrate or take away what they've done this season. That they were the best team in the division, they were the champions. I do wonder in other seasons, would they have been champions, you know, or would there have been better teams, you know, to take over? I mean, I think about Kyoto even last year. I don't think Kyoto were vintage champions last year, but I'm not sure, you know, their game, them playing against Niigata would be a fascinating game, I think, you know, to see which is stronger. So I do think the overall standard of the league wasn't the highest this year. I think when that happens, it really becomes being about consistency and game management. And you mentioned how good Niigata were at kind of holding on to a lead or coming from behind. Mm-hmm. You know, you could never really count them out of a match, I don't think. And Yokohama FC weren't as good, which is why they finished second. But when they went in front, they very rarely got beaten, I think. I mean, even the classic example of where they were 3-0 up against Gunma and ended up drawing 3-3, at least they got a point. You know, they didn't completely capitulate and lose the game. And I think what the difference was between the top two and the others is squeezing out a point, even when it looked unlikely or when the circumstances were unfavourable. It's something that, for example, Sendai just weren't able to do when they fell off a cliff, like you said. Tokushima weren't able to get the second goal, you know, to turn a 1-1 into a 2-1. But Yokohama and Niigata, they always just seem to have enough game management, enough kind of streetwise thinking to just get a result when the chips were a little bit down. So I think for me, you know, what made a good team in J2 this season was just being able to kind of cope with the grind of getting a point from a losing position or holding on to a win, you know, and being able to do it in an ugly way. I think the top three all showed that they were able to do that. And I don't think the other quick maths, I don't think the other 19 teams necessarily did that particularly well this year. I don't know, did I answer the question, James? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but you spoke for long enough that hopefully Mike won't notice if you didn't.
Oh, he's not. He'll have switched off. He'll have switched off.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no short corner at the end of this one, so he won't be listening through. yeah, I think those are fair points. I think also, well, Niigata were excellent and they finished top, and so they set the standard. So if we're comparing against them, then other teams are not going to, they're not going to look as good. I think I do know several times this season, though, I did say about Yokohama FC, they were able to win or get points when they were not playing particularly convincingly, which is the sign of a good team. So although like Niigata were not waltzing to the title, but they looked much more convincing. Mm. Yokohama FC also, perhaps the fact that Koki Ogawa scored so many of their goals made it look like they were a bit of a one-man team, which of course they were not, because he didn't do it all on his own. There were other players scored goals, other players set him up for goals. And they, of course, they had the very good Sven Brodersen in goal. So I think it perhaps, for me at least, perhaps it comes down to something about this style of play. But I'm perhaps more inclined to look at a team that plays a bit more sort of freewheeling attacking football and look at them as a good team. But then Sendai played freewheeling attacking football, but they were dreadful defensively. And that came back to bite them towards the end of the season when they dropped out of the... They were in the automatic promotion race and ended up not making the playoffs at all. Mm. With Oita, they, like we mentioned, it was a very strange year for them. And I think they, not quite to the extent of Tokushima, but they did draw a few too many games, which is why they were only able to finish fifth. I think if they'd managed to win a few more, of course, they would have finished a bit higher up. But they were hamstrung to some extent by their schedule in the early part of the season. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, yeah, I don't think that the standard of J2 was poor. I think there were good teams, and I think it was a very entertaining season, as it pretty much always is with J2. And I think entertaining because there was a lot of good football, not entertaining because there were a lot of calamitous mistakes, although there were plenty of those as well, which we'll come to in later review pods, I'm sure. But I think, yeah, I think perhaps it was... rather than us trying to say that J2 is not very good, I think perhaps we were looking at the likes of Niigata and comparing other teams to them. Of course, the other teams are going to look worse in comparison. Mm. And Yeah, perhaps also we didn't phrase things very well, and
well, I think
recalibration of what's good, perhaps.
Just to jump in, I think it depends. Like, as a neutral, good tends to mean entertaining, right? So I think if you were to ask me which teams I enjoyed watching the most this season, I think I enjoyed watching Yamagata and Kumamoto the most. You know, but their seasons didn't end finishing in the top two. So John's league table of entertaining teams would probably have them in the top two. But being a successful winning team and being effective is not the same as necessarily being entertaining all the time. You know, I mean, you can imagine it. If I got the chance to talk to Shuhei Yomada and said, "Oh, you congratulations on being promoted. You weren't my favourite team," he'd just look at me like I was insane. Like, well, my job is to get the team promoted. You know, what do you want from what do you want me to say, kind of thing. So I think maybe to kind of just you know, go back to Mike's question a little bit. I think we tended, or I personally tended to use good to mean like, I would set these players up a different way and I would have them doing different things. But my team would probably be, you know, I'd be fated as like a Bielsa type Maverick, but my team would ultimately end up just burning out after Christmas and finishing 12th. So, don't put me in charge is perhaps the takeaway from this season. But, you know, Yokohama FC, you can't really argue with how they... I think they squeezed as much as they could out of that squad. And it's very interesting to hear... you know, Yokohama FSG have similar thoughts to me of like, we as in Yokohama, it needs so many new players for next season to be competitive in J1 because they squeezed so much juice out of that squad this year. What was my point? I think when I tend to use the word good, I'm talking about being entertained. And I think a more circumspect person might be using good to mean effective. And I think we can say Niigata and Yokohama see the most effective teams for sure.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, thanks, Mike, for the question, and that's the end of this week's, not this week's or this episode. Thanks, John, for your thoughts on the top eight.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No problem. You're welcome. I hope some of that was hope some of that's usable. Yeah, I was rambling at times, but that's how I roll. Yeah, no, thanks, James.
Yeah, we've got to get the pod length up so that the patrons think that they are getting value for money.
We're back to good versus effective there, James.
Yeah, hope that they don't listen too carefully. so thanks, John. Thanks also to at Yokohama FSG, Gary Irwin, and at Vegalta _ blog for their contributions about their teams. And thanks to the patrons for their support. We hope that they do find the content is value for money. And of course, thank you for listening. Stay tuned. Coming up in the next few weeks, there will be the rest of J2 season review pods. And also Mike Innes is going to be producing J3 season review pods as well. Until then, see you next time.